We have Glenn Lindell here with me, Jeff Caton. We're at Panera Bread, I-435 in Metcalf. Well, just go ahead and start talking from college or whenever you want to start.
What do you want to know?
Well, since you were church pastor for David Quinn, right?
I'm in the same church. I was ever his pastor. I'm pastor emeritus of the church right now, which doesn't mean much. Well, it's an honor given to a former pastor sometimes. But I know David Quinn quite well. I know his family.
Well, let's start with when you went to college at Bethany.
Yeah, I came to... I graduated from our seminary in Chicago, North Park Seminary. We could get into the seminary at that time with a junior college degree, because that's all our college was. So most of us preachers, when we got our seminary certificate, we never got an actual MDiv. We went out and picked up our degree later on. So that's why I took the church at Marquette, 11 miles west of Lynchburg, and got qualified my 30 hours to get a degree. I majored in history. My mentor was Emery Lindquist, who was the president of Lindquist, of Bethany. Lindquist had a tremendous impact upon me. He'd been a Rhodes Scholar, very brilliant man, a rare Democrat in a sea of Republicans.
There aren't a lot of Democrats out there.
So he was quite an influence in my life. I valued my career at Bethany. I was only at Marquette for 3 years, and I moved from there to Galesburg, Illinois.
How long were you in Illinois?
Seven years, and I moved on to our headquarters and became the director of evangelism for a whole denomination. I had that job for 4 years, and I came back to Johnson County and started new work at the Hillcrest Covenant Church.
What year did you come back to Kansas?
1961.
1961?
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Is that when, did you found the church?
Yes, I was the first pastor. And we started with 75 people who came from the First Covenant Church downtown. And began from scratch. We met in a school building for 16 months, and we got our own church and moved into it, 87th and all. It's become one of our great churches in our denomination. I think it's probably the 10th largest church right now.
That church is still there, 87th and all, right?
Yeah. Very much so.
Some questions. When you founded the church, when you came here, you already had a congregation?
Yes, there were about 75 adults that came out to the church downtown.
Okay.
They lived in Johnson County. They wanted a church out here, so it was a pretty good start.
You said you started out in a school building?
Started a school building, Hope Shade School, which was torn down a few months ago, a half a mile west of where the church is now. And so we're glad to get into our building.
I'm sure.
Yeah.
How did you guys finance the building of your first church?
Well, the first church gave us the land, and we financed it by raising money ourselves, and we got a loan through the Southwest Bank, and that's how we started.
Mm-hmm. What do you think attracts? I mean, back then when your dominant congregation was just beginning, what do you think attracted people to that? And still today, what do you think attracts them to that particular denomination?
Well, our church started out as a very much ethnic church. Mm-hmm. We're a Swedish background. Mm-hmm. So every had Swedish community in Kansas City, you had a covenant church. We were the evangelical movement out from the State Church of Lutheran of Sweden, just like the Methodists were the evangelical movement out of the State Church of England, Episcopal Church. So you, and for years that was our growth. We grew biologically from the people of our church produced, and we grew when people moved to the community that were Swedish background. Once in a while, we got people that were not Swedish that began to start to join. That became evident later on. And when we started here, of course, in 1961, the Swedish element was not that important. But some people tried to make it a Swedish church. I did everything I could to fight against it. And our growth was mainly among people in the community that started to come to our church, the wonderful people. So the Hillcrest Church has grown enormously. through the years. But I wrote in the first 5-6 years were fantastic.
Mm-hmm. How much did you grow in those first 5 years?
Oh, we about tripled our congregation.
Five years. Yeah. So you said that the Swedish, the ethnic element wasn't so as important later on.
No,
was there a certain point,
I did,
you know, approximately a year, you can say, where that really started to kind of drop
off?
Oh,
it's just hard to determine any particular year, but I think the war, of course, did a lot of it. Mm-hmm. Ethnicity, you know, departed during the war.
Mm-hmm.
Boys went into the army, very girls in communities sometimes where they were stationed.
Mm-hmm.
And brought these girls, non-Swedish girls, home, you know. And so the Swedish element began to fade out. And we're thankful for that.
Mm-hmm.
Because, and even after it faded out, there are still elements remain. I mean, people love to sing the old Swedish hymn. They love the Swedish customs. And sometimes we didn't realize how much that affected new people. You know, who wondered what kind of church they were joining. So we began to learn that we had to get rid of some of the Swedish ideas.
Yeah. So do you still sing any Swedish hymns?
Not too many.
Not too many.
A lot of our hymn book, but our church has gone pretty much to the praise chorus idea.
Okay.
So we don't sing many hymns.
Okay. You were the pastor, so this is a different question for you, but how has your religion affected your life outside of church?
How has religion affected my life?
That's a tough one.
It'd be pretty hard to analyze it, but I think it affected a great deal. I mean, every day I draw strength from my faith. It established my vision for life. It helped me to see people differently than I would otherwise, I think. So, to be a pastor without having faith would be tragic. It sure affected me. For a very young boy, I have always had a pretty strong faith.
So did you know you wanted to become a pastor when you were a
yes,
boy?
Yes, I did.
I was
about 7 years old. A Sunday school teacher pulled me aside one day after class and said, "Glenn, someday you're going to be a preacher." I never forgot that. I took that to heart.
Took
that kind of a word from the Lord. And during high school, I kind of lost my vision. And I went to school for a year, took business, and went to work for the bank for a couple of years. And one hot August day in the bank, I told the boss how I was going to go back to school. I didn't see any future there. And he said, "Well, I don't blame you." But he said, "What are you going to take up?" And I said, "Oh, I'll go back and get some more business." And he looked at me in the eye and he says, "Haven't you always wanted to be a preacher? He was from our church." Well, I once felt that way, but I don't feel that way now. I just don't think I have what it takes. I think you do. And in 10 minutes, I had a letter written to our school in Chicago, and 3 weeks later, I was there. So that turned me around.
It was 3 days and 10 minutes, and
right.
You were there. Or 3 weeks and 10 minutes,
yeah,
and you were there.
10 minutes. Yeah, I always thank him for the little push he gave me. I've never regretted it. I've had a wonderful time at the pastor. Mm-hmm. An exciting life.
And when did you become a pastor? What year?
Well, I actually my first church was in 1947.
That was Church of Marquette.
Yeah.
Right.
But I had been licensed for 4 years before that. I was on internship in 1943 and 44, and came back and got my last 2 years at the seminary and worked in the college church for 2 years. Then we went on to Marquette. Got married out in Seattle.
What kind of activities does your church do or did? I mean, outside of Sunday services.
What kind of activities?
Mm-hmm.
Well, of course, your normal relationship people had with other people in the farm community, especially you have to minister to, you have to get along with your neighbors, and you find yourself ministering to them many ways. As a pastor, I've always taken part in the social life of the community. I've been active in ministerial associations, other service clubs, and other things. When I was at Marquette, I did a lot of things by myself, like ministering to alcoholics and people that needed help. And in Galesburg, Illinois, I became very active in that community. We were fighting some of the crime in the town, which was getting out of hand. And we managed finally to get city government, city management in and solve much of the problem. So I've always been active in things outside. And we have participated in many community activities throughout my ministry. I've tried to keep my people looking outward, seeing the needs of the community, getting involved in PTA groups, service clubs, all kinds of things.
When you came to Hillcrest, did you continue your work with alcoholics and or did the church continue?
Yeah, well, not so much here. This is a new community and a new area. It was like Galesburg, it's a town of 40,000. There you were part of the whole community. Out here we were Johnson County pretty much. So we were there, we were very much aware of what the needs were. I fought for housing for blacks. I wrote a letter to the Kansas City Star when the first black family moved into Johnson County, and the Star put on the front page. And that night there were bricks thrown at that home, and people shouting all night, and so they moved out. So I wrote a letter to the Star and I said, since when does a story like this warrant the front page? When a family moved into Johnson County, so what if they were black? You're the one that caused it. And I hope next time this happens, you don't say anything about it. It's not newsworthy. You know? The black people belong out here just like the white. And they never did write after that. But, we met with real estate people and tried to get them to welcome black people. One real estate woman told me very proudly that a black family moved into the community and she got the neighbors to come up with money and they gave them $6,000 premium if they'd move out. And I looked at her and I said, well, if I were a black man, I'd come and buy the house next door. That kind of a profit. So, but when Bobby Bell moved in, he'd been part of the chief, you know, that kind of broke the barrier. So now you find a lot of black families in Johnson County. But I remember the days of working in, except way up in the north end. There are a few families there. But Johnson County was a white county. Leawood had actually covenants in their titles that they gave to people that no black family could ever be allowed to own property. But that became passe when the government passed the civil rights law. So I've been very active in things like that.
Sounds like it. What are the economic arrangements for the church? How is it supported, financed?
Free will offering to people. I was always very strong in stewardship. We had a big drive every fall. The people come forward with their pledges. We call them faith promises. So I've never been a part of a church that ever failed to meet its budget. We've always challenged people to give sacrificially, and they have. That's how we finance it.
You have a lay committee that takes care of the finances and different, you know, maintenance of the building, things like that.
Yeah. Oh yes, every church had a financial secretary who takes care of the money when it comes in, and then a treasurer that takes care of writing the checks, seeing to that the bills are paid properly. And there's always a stewardship committee too that's behind it.
How did food play into church, you know, in Hillcrest and other churches you pastor?
How
did food figure into your churches? I remember growing up in Catholic church, and we would have all the women would cook, you know, potluck meals.
Uh-huh.
Did you guys have? Was food a big part of your church?
Oh, yeah.
Or?
It's always been a big part. I enjoy eating in church. I always have. When I was a kid and I smelled the coffee cooking downstairs, I knew we were going to have a good time together. Somewhere or another, when there's food involved, people. And I know some pastors who don't think you should ever eat in church. I can't believe it. So I've always pushed it. I think serving meals to the community, even charging money for it. Mm-hmm. You don't make much money, but it's getting people to work together, getting people to encounter other people in the community. It's a good outreach.
How is your church governed? In the Catholic Church, you obviously have a very structured hierarchy, but a lot of the Protestant denominations are much more, they're a lot different and they're run different ways.
The Covenant Church has always been a congregation. In other words, the congregation has its final authority. Mm. And that's when we left the State Church of England, which was very much hierarchical, the state owned the church and everything else, and they hired the pastors, so the lay people had little to do about it. When we started over to the lay people, insisted they have something to say. So the Covenant Church has always been very much congregational. Any decisions have to be made by the church in a special meeting call. And we're getting away from that. It bothers me. We have many churches now that have council. Some councils seem to think it's because they've been elected by the church sole authority. But I keep reminding them, you do not have the authority. Any major item has to be referred back to the congregation for approval. But it's hard to get some pastors out here to see that.
So does the congregation own all the church real estate? Or is that part of a bigger Covenant Church?
No, it's our congregation. It's locally owned. Okay. Every Covenant Church is autonomous. We make our own decisions. We own our own property and so on. But we are related to the denomination mainly through trust. We desire that fellowship, and we unite together for missionary purposes, for education. Mm-hmm. A local church cannot do its own missionary work. You've got to have a larger group. Even to get into a country and to establish a school, that takes more than one church. They have all the churches cooperate. So that's what a denomination is for. But the denomination does not really rule the local church. It can make suggestions. It can outline possibility of ministry, but the local church is always insists that it runs its own business. And I think most Protestant churches are organized that way.
Does Hillcrest have a school associated with it?
No, except a preschool.
Just a preschool? Do any of the Covenant churches have schools? Or is that?
I don't think there's any Covenant church that had an academy, no, nothing like Catholic do. We have nothing like that. We have a high school in Minneapolis and a grade school. I think from kindergarten all the way to 12 now. But that's run by the whole Minneapolis Council of Covenant Church.
How does your congregation get new members? Do you go out and try to bring in new members, or do you let them come in?
I think most of the growth comes by people who come in, especially out in the area like this. New people moving all the time, and then they look around. So you can visit several churches before they settle down. So most of our growth has come from that. But also through youth activities, we have, the Covenant Church has always been strong in youth and children. And so we have strong children programs and strong youth programs. And you bring the kids in, and the parents begin to come too. That accounts for a lot of growth.
So, would you say a lot of the children in your churches, they become part of the church when they get older?
Mm-hmm.
Is that a big thing? Because a lot of churches.
Kids grow up, they go to college, and very often never come back. They move other places, or there's a job. Or it depends sometimes on who they marry. Sometimes they'll follow their wife to her own community. But a lot of them never come back. But many of the kids who do come back become active leaders. Not all of them.
What kind of educational or children's programs do you have?
Well,
or did have, I should say.
We have Sunday school had always been important. And it usually held an hour on Sunday morning. In fact, every child in the parish enrolled in Sunday school, with almost no exception. And then we always have activities in the middle of the week. Hillcrest has had Awana clubs for now over 25 years, where children come together and they have a counselor. They have 7 or 8 kids, you know, with a counselor, and they memorize Bible verses. They study together, do craft things together. It's been a very successful program.
You spoke earlier about mission activity. Mm-hmm. And I know David seems like several times a year he's off in South America or somewhere.
Yeah, he's a member of the missions committee. I think he's going to be chairman of the committee next year.
Oh, yeah. How much missionary work does your congregation do?
Well, in the first place, our congregation sets aside 30% of every dollar comes in for mission.
So 30 cents every dollar.
Never touched. That goes directly into mission. And that becomes quite a sum. In other words, our church will spell at least $600,000 this year in the missionary program. And that's pretty good. I wish we could keep raising it. I'd like to see it get up to half.
That is phenomenal.
I think it is for most churches. And our churches, our people give well, so that means that the 30% is a pretty tidy sum. And we encourage our young people to go on missions. Every year we send several groups of young people to places like Guatemala or Honduras, Ecuador. Some have gone to India, some have gone to African countries. So most all of our youth have been involved in some kind of mission activity.
Do your missions focus on feeding people in those countries, education, clean water? Is there any particular basis for it?
Yeah, most of our missions, you know, focus on helping build housing. I think that's what the kids are more than anything. And working with children. Well, part of them will be working on building a house, the other will be having schools for the kids, particularly summertime, vacation schools. And that's been a good outreach. I mean, they learn to love these children in a hurry. And they come back very, very excited about what they've seen, what they've done.
So they focus on building housing.
We go to Hutchinson every year. Our junior high school kids, middle school kids, go to Hutchinson.
What do they do there?
I don't know. There's some area of town where they work every year. I don't know.
Well, there's a few parts of Hutch that I think certainly need it.
I don't know how they got started going there, but they've been going there for years.
Yeah. Great.
Just a chance to get out of town.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Oh, I'm sure they
do. Just to see how other people live. Well, I don't think Hutch has much of a slum, do they?
Not really. There are a few parts of town that are kind of chintzy, but... You know, any town that size has
Well, those kind of Marquette have some pretty unkempt houses. A lot of widows living at homes, you know, didn't have money to clean them up, so they could use a lot of work there, too.
One of my favorite questions my class likes to ask, can you tell us about anybody in your congregation, or any of your congregations, that really sticks out as odd? Any really unique characters? It seems like every church has them.
People that you can really depend on.
Well,
that are faithful and not only in church but outside of church. Yeah.
Do you remember anybody that you pastored that really sticks out in your mind? I mean, as unforgettable, you know, good or bad or interesting, or quirky, I mean, just...
Well, my first church, we had a man who was a big grocery man in town. And he was the chairman of the church. He was a good help to me. Lots of help. Well respected by everybody in town. A genuine, faithful churchman. Eldon Peterson. I'll never forget him. And we had people in Galesburg. One man there was the chairman of the church too. Was also a very outstanding layman. Stood head and shoulders above, cracked everybody. He's chairman of our church for 28 years. So there have been some outstanding. There are outstanding people in every church. It's amazing. Yeah. Okay. Real giants.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Because any church has them.
That's right.
I asked earlier about programs for children, you know, Sunday school, different activities. Do you have any adult programs?
Oh, yeah. There are adult classes Sunday mornings, and every church has women's programs, men's programs. They didn't always meet regularly, but they'll meet, say, seasonally or something like that. But most churches, women do meet regularly. In our present church, we have a program in Hillcrest. We have a program for senior adults that meets every month. That's been a very effective program. We'll have about 100 people every month. They have a potluck that is usually a good program, and it means a lot to our old people.
Well, I think we covered an awful lot pretty fast.
Well, I think we have.
I don't have any.
I don't know whether you learned much or not.
Well, plenty. I really don't have any more questions. Is there anything else that you wanted to talk about?
What do you think about the church?
I haven't gone to church for quite a while.
Why?
Well, it's Catholic for one thing.
And then what do you mean that? Catholic for one thing. Why'd you say that?
Moved away from home.
Yeah.
And my grandparents passed away. And that's who I used to go to church with my grandparents every Sunday. And then...
How about your parents? Do they go?
No, they don't.
They don't.
Dad's Methodist. He goes every so... My parents go every so often.
Uh-huh.
But I just kind of moved away and got into college.
And your parents have never been really active in the church?
Dad used to be.
Mm-hmm.
But not so much anymore. He does a lot of other community stuff. Rotary.
How does the church impact you? Do you think the church is important today? Does it fill a role?
I think it does. It gives people a sense of community, especially in bigger cities like Johnson County and Overland Park, where that sense of community and neighborhood is essentially gone. Or going away.
Not the only thing left is the church.
Yeah.
That's true.
And that's the
PTA is in the church and the school. But there's not much to hold the community together except the church, and only about 25% of the people go to church.
Mm, exactly.
Yeah.
And
the rest of them do not know where the neighbors are, and except they know people that they work with. That's about it.
Has your churches, have they faced a declining, I don't want to say population, but a decline in congregation? Because that's a problem with a lot of churches.
Not so much. I mean, we're fortunate. Our membership is going up all over the country.
Really?
And I think we're about, at least, I would say we've grown 50% the last 10 years.
You're still going up, and everybody else, or nearly everybody else.
Yeah, that's true. And we've grown a lot of new churches. So it's been a time of good growth for us. But we expect quite a bit of our members too.
Mm-hmm.
Our membership is kept on a high level. Most of it, you got to go through a class. You got to give evidence of faith.
Mm-hmm.
People are not just swept in. Come forward at some meeting or the pastor talk to them for a few minutes. No, I used to put people through 6 weeks of membership training.
What kind of training was it?
Oh, just introduce them to how the church started, what the church represents. How it came into being, how our church came into being, what the church expects of members, what Christianity is all about. And we've had people that after that took the class, it's not for me. I'm not ready for it. Others were. And some people had a changed life during those meetings.
Mm-hmm.
We expect a lot. I think in many churches, membership is way too low.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, it's so easy to get in. So there's some Baptist church, they have to ask people to come forward, and as soon as they come forward and kneel and pray, somebody's there with a book to enroll their name and become automatic members. So that's why Baptist churches grow so fast.
Mm-hmm.
But a lot of that growth, you know, becomes pretty weak after a while.
It falls off pretty quick.
Yeah, it falls off very quick. Oklahoma, they had a higher percentage of divorce among the Baptist churches than the rest of the state.
Yeah. So you guys do a lot to keep your members. You don't just bring them in and then. Well, you're in.
There's some recidivism, but most of our members stay pretty active.
Mm.
If they're not, they should drop away. And we have some of that too. You never have 100% success.
No, I don't think any
It's a real disappointment.
Any group does.
Yeah. The Catholic, of course, they have a training. People have to go through training.
Yes.
Coming up.
Yes. They're very picky about who they let in.
But I think they have quite a few dropouts.
I think that they've faced a lot of that the past few years.
The last few years. Yeah.
So a lot of the scandals that have been going on. I think a lot of people have left because of that. Mm-hmm. I remember my grandma before she passed away. It really sickened her that people lose faith that fast when it was, they were.
So many people come to the Catholic Church. You have several masses on a Sunday and all these churches out here. I don't see how they get to know each other. And they come and they go, and there's very little chance to get to know each other.
And I don't have any experience with Catholic churches in big cities. All of mine have been in Hutch or in Victoria, Kansas, where my family's from, and St. Fidelis. And that group is still there. Mm-hmm. So it's been in a lot smaller communities. It's not really a big of a problem, like a lot of churches here. Mm-hmm. But yeah, it has been a problem.
But the Catholics do not provide too many activities outside of worship, do they, in the churches?
They do. I think it depends on that. From church to church. Uh-huh. We still live in Wichita.
But they're strong in their parochial school.
Yes.
That holds a lot of people.
Yeah. So I went to Catholic grade school until I was in fifth grade. Mm-hmm. And then we moved to Hutchinson. And so I went to public school. Mm-hmm. And I mean, I'm privileged to go to a Catholic school. I
mean, good education.
Yeah.
Good discipline.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Right?
Yes.
You gotta get your hand not beaten by a ruler.
Well, actually, we only had a few nuns, and there was only one nun that nobody really liked. None of the students really liked.
Yeah.
Sister Eileen. And she'd walk around with her little Pekingese dog Pepper. And she just kind of, she ran the school. Not much of the rest of the nuns. They were all pretty nice and pretty, a lot more laid back than.
Did she use any force to?
No, almost all of our teachers were lay teachers, and a lot of our teachers weren't.
You could tell by her voice and look in her eyes. In fact, that was enough. Huh?
Yeah, it didn't take much to cower before her.
Yeah, teachers could rule a lot just by the way they look.
Exactly. Mm. Exactly.